Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 18. Yes, we have officially announced Out of the Park Baseball 18 coming on March 24th, 2017. But if you pre-order it today, you can pick it up for a 10% discount. Get it for just $35.99 and you get it a few days early. Early access on March 20th, 2017. Out of the Park Baseball 18 is the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year. And we've added a whole bunch of cool new stuff to the game, including but not limited to, obviously, the 2017 opening day rosters across the majors and the minors. You got 8 international leagues in addition to the American major leagues and minor leagues. We've got a cool new challenge mode and online user profiles that let you compare and contrast with your friends and maybe your enemies what you've been accomplishing. There's an improved 3D mode with game highlight reels, which is really fun. TJ is going to love that. We've got tournaments and fall leagues, including the Arizona Fall Leagues, plus you can set up your own national or international tournaments. The Negro Leagues have been added, so some of those great players from the past, like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson, you can use them for the first time ever. We've got improved AI for the rosters, for trades, and in-game AI been optimized and enhanced. There's a redesigned injury system and a whole bunch more stuff. Out of the Park Baseball 18. You can pre-order today, get 10% off the regular price of $39.99. Get it for just $35.99. Go to OOTP Developments today. Support indie sports games. Support the Press Row Podcast. Out of the Park Baseball 18.
Well, Rich Grisham, it's now early February, and after last week where I got to have a discussion on early MLB The Show 17 news with That Sports Gamer and Millennium, now you're back on the Press Row Podcast as we get to go into a bunch of information that EA Sports released through their financial report and follow-ups following that. I'm Brian Weed, I Pasta Padre, and we've got news on the level of success from FIFA, but also something of a preview of EA Sports fiscal year 2018 lineup, which is all games released from April 2017 through March 2018. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Brian. I always love talking about sports, love talking about video games, love talking about business. So you put all three of those things together, you really got my attention. It's good stuff.
Yeah, this is a lot of information for a generally dead period of the year. This is not when we're getting news on the upcoming Madden as far as like gameplay or features generally, you know, or you know, NHL or FIFA or NBA 2K. That's still months and months away. Pretty much you're left with MLB The Show at this time of year as the only game. But there's a lot to go through here that EA went into just now. And I think we'll start with NBA Live.
Okay.
So last May, you'll remember, NBA Live 17 was quote-unquote delayed. And they said, EA Sports said, immediately after that, we're going to put out a game on consoles early 2017. It's going to be in our fourth quarter fiscal year 2017, so January through March of 2017. And you'll also recall, Rich, that everyone on the panel of our Press Row podcast said, I don't think that's going to happen. You know, it's not just the track record of the series, which had been delayed or canceled three times over a six-year span, but the fact that releasing a basketball game in February or March didn't make a whole lot of sense, especially when a lot of people, anyone who's interested in NBA, probably already bought the competitor in NBA 2K back in September or October. So EA, from their financial slideshow, left off NBA Live from its quarter four schedule, which it had been there in every financial report, quarterly report, prior to now. So I immediately saw that and tweeted out. I said, it looks like NBA Live is canceled or delayed again. An hour or two later, we got confirmation of that from EA themselves saying the next NBA Live console game will be out in the fall. So they're looking to release an NBA Live 18, essentially, and whatever would have been of NBA Live 17, whether it would have been released last year or early this year, That's canceled. That's done. That's scrapped. So they slide themselves into a period, which presumably into that period we've talked about, where there's almost every sports game for the entire year releasing. So that's a challenge in and of itself. But a brand that has been degraded so harshly over the last 6 years, and really the only way they're able to find success right now is on the mobile game, which has done pretty well. So it's interesting to see that EA continues to stick with NBA Live on consoles, even though I can't imagine another game lasting this long when it's been a financial drag on them for so long. And when there's a competitor on the marketplace that's so entrenched, Rich, what was your reaction to this?
My first reaction was good. And I'm not being snarky or cynical. I'm completely legitimate. Good. Number one, the last thing I need on my plate personally right now is another, you know, sports game that's not going to be MLB The Show, which...
Oh, it's always about you, Rich. It's always about you. What's inconvenient for you, Rich?
You know, from a console sports game perspective, as we've talked about for years, I mean, MLB The Show occupies a very large slice of my gaming time whenever it comes out. But really, from a perspective of... I'm glad that it continues to at least be in their long-term plans. I believe that it takes a long time these days to make a really good game, and so they're taking their time. Now, are they actively working on it? Do they have a dedicated team building it out, or are they moving resources around and then, you know, maybe coming back to it? That's the real question, right? So yes, it might come back in the fall. You know, if there has been a group of people working on this game for the last couple of 2 or 3 years, and they feel that they will have something that is really ready for prime time, a console, you know, AAA quality console basketball game that can compete with the other sports video games and AAA video games that it is going up against in the incredibly busy fall timeframe, great. You know, EA, I believe, continues to want to keep its partnership with the NBA over the long term, because as we'll talk about later, there are many different ways to make money in sports video games. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that it's not dead. I'm glad that they're not putting something out that's, you know, halfway at this point in time. And even if they don't release a true console basketball game for another year or two, I'm fine with that, right? I mean, just the older I get and the more experience I get in this business, it's okay to take your time. You can reestablish brands, you can establish new brands. The way that you create and distribute and manage video games in 2017 is very different than it was just a few years ago, and is going to continue to be different over the next few years. You know, we've had all sorts of conversations about what sports video games are going to look like over the next few years. So I think they're keeping the lights on for the future NBA Live, and I'm fine with that. You know, we sports video game fans these days have no shortage of great experiences to be had, whether you're talking about the big EA games or they're talking about NBA 2K, The Show, Pro Evolution, some of the indie games that have come out, some of the, you know, the heavy esports games like Rocket League. You know, nobody's clamoring, oh my gosh, it's a desert, I need something new. Take your time, get the game right in whatever fashion it's supposed to be, and come back later. I'm happy with the whole thing.
So at several points there, you referred to the idea of time, right? And we've had this before where, hey, if they just had extra development time, they could have done this or this could have been better. But NBA Live is not the only example of this, but NBA Live is one example of this where time doesn't necessarily mean quality. Time doesn't necessarily mean a good product. EA had with NBA Live between NBA Elite 11 and NBA Live 14, and you could maybe say, well, yeah, they wasted a lot of time in there because they started to build things and scrapped them or whatever. But they had opportunities to spend that extra time, and they did it unwisely, or they made mistakes along the way. And for all we know, that could have happened again here. So the idea that if they just take another year, if they just take another 6 months, then NBA Live's going to be good. It's still going to be years and years behind NBA 2K, no matter how long they take to do it. The question then becomes, do you trust EA to get the product right? And it's hard to say yes. Do you trust EA that they have the right vision for this series? It's hard to say yes at this point. Do you trust that it's a product that could eventually succeed even if they did the right things? No, I can't trust that either, because as we've gone through before, it's really difficult for any sport nowadays to have enough sales to justify two different games. It's why soccer, we'll get to soccer later, but it's the biggest sport in the world, and that's the only sport that can support two games right now. So NBA Live is not only facing just that competition from NBA 2K, but competition from FIFA and competition from Madden and competition from every other video game that releases in September or October of the year. And as we've discussed on podcasts where we've gone through the issues with having all these games released within the same month or whatever it might be, is that things fall down the totem pole. NBA Live, no matter how good it is, it's going to be at the very bottom. It's going to be at the very bottom where people aren't going to give it a chance. And we saw that with NBA Live 16, which sold 8,000 copies its first week compared to NBA 2K's 1 million copies its first week. So it has an uphill battle to fight regardless. Now, just my personal opinion, Rich, is that I don't necessarily see the game being pushed back as a good thing, because no, I didn't think whatever they were going to put out in February or March was going to be anything spectacular, but it could have been the start of something, and it would have had the opportunity to breathe on its own, where you could say, okay, if it is a free to play game, let's say it's a free to play game, people would get on board with that. Or if it's a console, you know, a typical console $60 game, it's going to be a tough sell no matter when they release it in the year. It's not going to sell well its first year regardless. Now, one thing I would say, Rich, is no matter when NBA Live comes out, and like I was just saying just now, it has to do something different, right? It can't just be a basic NBA game with basic features that have come in every game before it, right? You would agree with that.
100%.
Yeah, so whether it's the feature set or whether it's the model, free-to-play model, something along those lines, which has worked with their mobile games, whether, you know, how that can work potentially, or a digital download game. I mean, what I see from most people on social media, on forums, on my website, give us NBA Street, right? there is no yearning from consumers right now to have a second simulation basketball game. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that we can't point to any quantitative data that would argue against it.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's also a lot of things that you and me, Brian, and the folks in our circle here feel strongly about that the general public doesn't necessarily feel strongly about. And a great example we'll talk about a little more later, so I don't want to get too far ahead of it, but it was FIFA 17, right? I mean, that is a shining example of how we felt in our group here, and even in the people that sort of participate in the commentary and the interaction and social media and stuff, that this was far from FIFA's best effort. You know, there was some cool stuff about it, but there's hardly anyone that I spoke to that played both FIFA and Pro Evo that didn't point to Pro Evo being the far superior on-field experience. Yet, as we'll talk about in depth, this was the best year ever for FIFA from a sales and revenue perspective.
So go ahead.
So my point is that just because we may feel this particular way, there's still a very large amount of people that could potentially react and spend their money that would tell a different story. I'm not suggesting that is absolutely going to be the case with NBA Live in whatever shape it takes. it might be 2 or 3 or 4 years until the next EA NBA game comes out. It could come out, you know, they could triple down on this and be like, you know what, we're just going to build for a truly transformational next generation experience where we're going to rely on sort of, you know, leapfrogging NBA 2K and just really just wait 2 or 3 or 4 years and try to do something completely different. Or they could be like, you know what, we're not happy with where the game was right now. We need another 3 months, and that's just going to become NBA Live 18. Who knows what they're thinking? Could the general public support 2 basketball games? Absolutely. I mean, you look at some of the most successful games right now. You look at, I think Overwatch has 25 million players. Overwatch mm-hmm. wasn't even a thing a year or two ago, right? Now it's mm-hmm. one of the world's most popular games. Rocket League, you know, has tens of thousands of users. You know, there is nothing that is stopping a new version of NBA Live from coming out and being fantastic and smart video game fans flocking to it if it truly is. And again, I'm not suggesting that's what's going to happen.
Right.
All I'm saying is that we shouldn't discount the possibility of something happening. However, recent history does not suggest that anything like that is going to happen. Recent history suggests that that they're going to continue to struggle. But you never know what's going to happen. Games continue to get more and more expensive to create, more and more difficult to create, more and more difficult to compete against each other, and things go up and down. So, you know, I don't know. My point is, I don't think that we can quantitatively state that there's not a market, that people won't buy 2 games. Maybe people won't have to buy 2 games. You know, maybe they'll be able to play NBA Live in a way that we haven't really thought about, or maybe it
subscription
becomes,
right, or service, a
subscription
right?
service, or
free to play. Yeah.
You know, where if you're an EA Access member, you just get the game. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well,
we know that the world is changing rapidly, and it's very hard to predict 18 to 24 months out. That's all I'm saying. Hey, everybody, we're going to take just a moment here to thank our sponsors of this week's show. Blue Apron. I am so excited that Blue Apron is a sponsor because I am a customer of Blue Apron. I was a customer before they sponsored this show, and I'm a customer because they're really good. So here's what Blue Apron does. It's just brilliant. They deliver a set of meals to your door that are not prepared meals, but they give you everything that you need to cook the meal down to the precise amount of each ingredient. They make it easy. They make it fun. It tastes great. There's an incredible range of meals that you get to choose from. And they just do a fantastic job. I cannot recommend it enough. So here's what they do. Really, they have 2 major impacts, which are great. Not only is the food fantastic, but they have a really positive impact on households because research shows that Blue Apron families that cook together nearly 3 times more often, and we all know that cooking together as a family builds strong family bonds. You know, my wife and my son and I, it's kind of cool to get in the kitchen. My wife is a cook. I am not, but Blue Apron has made it certainly what it used to be, kind of traumatic to get in there and try to help out. You know, if you're not a cook and you're in the kitchen with someone who is a cook, boy, that can be tough. But using the Blue Apron process, it's actually the opposite way. And my son, who's 9, has had a blast helping us out with it. So that's cool. Plus, they also have a positive impact on the community. Their seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Their beef is raised humanely. Their chickens are free range. Their pork is raised naturally. They have regenerative farming practices used for their produce. And Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 99.5% of food deserts. So, you know, because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they're also reducing food waste. Now, that's all great, but the food also is terrific. For example, check out some of the meals that are available in January. You can get seared pork chops with farro and cranberry chutney. You can get spaghetti squash and marinara with mushrooms and garlic knots. You get some spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake. I mean, this is good stuff. It tastes great, and it's fun to put together. And by the way, you're not going to be in the kitchen for an hour and a half putting all this stuff together. It's really well put together. They make it easy to understand what to do. It's like a half an hour, top to bottom, most of the time, you know, at least it has been for us. And it's, again, they give you the exact amount of each ingredient for the recipe. So Even better than all of that is that you can help support the Press Row podcast, one of your favorite shows. If you go to blueapron.com/pressrow, not only will you be able to help us out by doing that, but you get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping. You cannot beat that. 3 meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/pressrow. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/pressrow. Help yourself and help the Press Row podcast and have a little fun cooking some great food. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
And so the key here is, and this will transition us into kind of our next subject, is that the reason why NBA Live still exists is because EA sees at some point in the future the potential of digital revenue coming from the game. They 100%. See the potential that if they can get the game into people's hands, people will spend money on Ultimate Team. People will spend money on whatever the next Ultimate Team is.
Well, that plus, Brian, I don't want to cut you off. I'll let you go. Plus, just a purely digital distribution network where they don't have to pay anybody but themselves, right? There's no margin being taken away from retailers or from manufacturers or from physical distribution. So that dual combination of a purely digital distribution channel and the additional digital revenue, that's absolutely what keeps the NBA Live heartbeat going in whatever shape that it is.
And this is why you don't – there are certain sports games that don't exist anymore. And part of the reason is because that potential for digital revenue streams is not the same. NBA is a huge worldwide market where EA could tap into that, where 2K already does. But you see this with – FIFA, you see it with Madden, you see it with, to a lesser extent, with NHL and UFC. But Rich, another thing EA announced through their financial reporting was that the Ultimate Team revenue for the year was up. How much up was it?
I don't know the percentages, but in 2016, EA made $800 million across Ultimate Team, across their various sports franchises. $800 million. That is 80% of $1 billion in 12 months. And in the year before, it was $650 million. So that is a pretty significant rise. I mean, that figure stuns me. It is unbelievable to consider that almost $1 billion was made in revenue from Ultimate Team. And what's stunning about it, well, there are a number of things. Number one, it is not pure profit, but it is a much higher profit margin than anything else that Electronic Arts produces. What I mean by that is it takes labor. It takes paying people, and it takes paying likeness rights, and it takes money to produce the assets that Ultimate Team that requires Ultimate Team, but it does not take the creation of a disc and the and the shipping of the disc to the stores and the paying the store. So the margin on that $800 million is much higher than the margin on your just pure sales revenue from selling the game. And number two, I don't care what we say or don't say about Ultimate Team in a particular year. Clearly, the market loves Ultimate Team. And what EA is doing across Ultimate Teams with all of its franchises, they're clearly delivering something that the market is enjoying enough to spend that kind of money. And then number three, And again, I don't think that enough people that love sports games really appreciate this. I firmly believe that the only reason that we even have modern sports games is because of Ultimate Team. It is so expensive to license these games. It is so expensive to produce these games. And as consoles get more and more powerful, the costs and the time to develop these games rise exponentially. If it weren't for this really just – if it weren't for this massive amount of money, I don't know that we'd even have any of these games because there's really no other correlate to an annual licensed sports game. no other company makes a game every year. Even the franchises that come out every year, like the Call of Duty franchises, are not built by the same studio. They have three different studios making, getting 3 years to build each Call of Duty. You know, it's just, it boggles my mind. And while I personally don't play very much Ultimate Team or Diamond Dynasty or any of those others, man, I am so happy that they exist, because there's a reason that I love playing sports games a lot these days, because the core games in many ways are so good. And I think we all owe Ultimate Team at least partial gratitude for that.
And it's no coincidence that a game like Madden, EA releases a special digital version of Super Bowl Edition, it's called, and they pack in with it 5 all pro packs to open up in your Ultimate Team. Like, it not only gets people hooked into the economy of Ultimate Team, the kind of I was going to say addiction, which it does become for some people, but just the habit of playing in this different manner and playing daily, it's very different than just playing when you want to recreationally. It almost becomes like a job. Starts to feel like it. But that extends the game's life beyond the end of the season. Like, yes, it used to be Madden would be, okay, Super Bowl's over, Madden goes, it gets traded in or whatever it is. But no, they continue on now, and they continue to make money on a game that they sold months and months ago. MLB The Show continues to put out new content in its Diamond Dynasty mode, even with the next game 2 months away from release. And the MLB season, what's it been over for? Almost three, four months? So,
yep.
It shows that it keeps people engaged. Yeah, it sure does get into their wallets, but it does keep people engaged more with the game. And even if they're spending money, it seems like they're feeling as though they got more value out of the game than they did prior. But then, you know, it just helps to support the rest of the development, too, as we've also discussed in the past, is that, like you said, Rich,
well,
if it wasn't for Ultimate Team, at the very least, we wouldn't have as many games as we do now. We'd have just a big three or big four. But that helps really fund the development of those games on a year-to-year basis.
And sports game players are smart. They wouldn't spend their money if they weren't enjoying themselves.
Well, Rich, I would disagree a bit, because you look at, like, it does have an edge of gambling to it as far as opening packs.
Of course
packs.
It does. What?
So, and when I gamble, Rich, do I enjoy? I don't know if I enjoy it. I stress out.
You and me both. But look, why is the NFL so popular, Brian?
Well, there's fantasy football.
Why is the NFL so popular? Before fantasy football, the NFL was still wildly popular. And the NFL became America's sport, excuse me, not America's pastime, when gambling, because of gambling, right? It's just, it's the perfect sport to gamble on. It is, and it's a perfect television sport. But I mean, at its core, the reason that the NFL moved from where it was in the 40s and 50s to the forefront of American sports consciousness is because of gambling. Gambling drives so much about the world of sports, and everybody knows it. That's why there are injury reports every week before the NFL games are played.
It's for Vegas, yeah.
Of course. And everybody that is affiliated with the sport knows it. Now, I personally... And you personally don't enjoy gambling, but again, that's our...
Oh, I enjoy it when I win, Rich.
Oh, and look, when I go to Vegas a couple, 2 or 3 times a year, you're darn right, I walk into the sports book and I place a bet. In fact, I was in Vegas. Yeah. I was in Vegas last week, and I was at the Bellagio, and I put $150 down on the Falcons in the Super Bowl with 3 points, right? So again, it's $150. If I lose the bet, I'm going to be a little ticked off, but it's not going to...
Oh, no.
Not going to ruin me, right?
So sports gambling for me, Rich, like you said, is the best form of gambling, because at the very least, if you bet on a football game, you're getting 3 hours worth of
Agony?
Entertainment slash agony, yeah. Exactly.
See,
you're getting, as opposed to slapping $50 down on a blackjack table right. and it going in 5 seconds. Yeah. So I've always thought that sports gambling was the best value. But anyway, that's a tangent we don't need to go into.
Right. But my point is that that's exactly why, to some degree, that these modes work so well in sports video games. Because that undercurrent of gambling is part of what gets a lot of people excited about it. Now, I
get some YouTube views. Sure seems like it. People put, I dropped $250. Let's see what I got.
Right. And I thoroughly enjoy watching an NFL game and having no money on it. When I have money on a game, which is extremely rare, I feel anxiety when I'm watching the game. But again, many, 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 many people, billions and billions of dollars, countless dollars are wagered on NFL games every year. So, I mean, it funds the undercurrent. So, it's no surprise to me, and I don't look at it in a cynical way or in a predatory way. I really don't. I look at it as, look, they continue to experiment, but ultimately EA and MLB The Show and NBA 2K and Pro Evolution, right? They've found an interesting way to create an entire new generation of fans. You talk to people our age, Brian, not only people like us that are just fans, but even, you know, when we had Dazar on, you know, a year and a half ago, you know, he would say, I don't play that crazy NBA, my team, like, that's not my thing. But we're of a certain age, you know, and a generation, whereas you get, you know, a lot of the younger kids, the only thing that they know is Ultimate Team. So it's just the way that it is. And again, I look at it in a positive way, right? You've got, nobody would spend any money on it if the game, if the underlying game was terrible. So it fuels a better experience. And I think it you know, the makers of these games know that, yes, they need to continue to please the fans of the revenue driving modes, but they also need to keep their core, because their core also provides that foundation. So I look at it as a positive thing, until and unless they release a $60 game that only has Ultimate Team on it. I'm not going to have any problem with it. But the gambling aspect is absolutely part of it. But it's part of it because the gambling is the undercurrent of all big-time sports, whether you're talking the NFL, college football, and everything else.
So as far as just normal sales, as opposed to what we concentrate so much on now, digital revenue, but FIFA was up 8% over the same period last year, FIFA 17 versus FIFA 16. And it was, again, it's not the first time, but it was the biggest selling video game in the world, Rich.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised by that. I don't know why. You know, looking back, I can't imagine why I was surprised. But I was a little surprised, I guess, just because in our group, as I mentioned earlier in the show, FIFA didn't really strike home as much for us as it had in the past. But clearly, worldwide, hey, look, it still
reviewers,
remains.
Like, reviewers, you can do that with Call of Duty games. I mean, it did drop this year. But before that, people would say, you know, this is the year. It just doesn't feel as good. It's not as good. And then the sales kept going up forever, right? Eventually, it might hit a wall, but we also don't have a perspective of these other countries, the way they view the game, and where it continues to sell so well. I mean, it does really well in North America, of course. It finishes in the top 10 now every year, but we don't have the opportunity to see the game from the eyes of those around the world, I guess.
Right, but I mean, there's a few things that this sort of, and again, I can't quantitatively say this, but I'm pretty sure that these statements are close to true, if not completely true. Number one, I'll bet you, Brian, that a healthy percentage of the sales of FIFA 17 were from people who buy one or two games a year. And FIFA is their one or two games a year that they buy.
And they play it year-round, absolutely.
And they play it year-round. FIFA probably has one of the largest appeals, because almost no matter what team you support, your team is in the game. Whether it's a Premier League team or a Bundesliga team or a La Liga team or an MLS team. I mean, how many games can you, as you know, whether you love a, you know, one of the super clubs, or whether you love a championship side club can you actually go in, get, be the real team with the real players and the real kits, and in a number of cases the real stadium. You know, it offers an authentic experience for a really wide variety of people, a very large appeal. And then, of course, you had the new story mode, which absolutely had to appeal to people who may not have picked up FIFA in the last few years, but maybe had wanted to and were intimidated by it. You know, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that FIFA was an intimidating game to me, because I wasn't nearly as into international football 5, 6, 7 years ago that I have been for the last 3 or 4 years, as I've spoken about, and as I even wrote about in a piece for Hit the Pass a couple weeks ago, which if you haven't seen, I would encourage you to take a look at my appreciation of Pro Evo. There's so many factors looking back that were not surprising to why FIFA did so well. And of course, you know, Ultimate Team. So you put all of those things together, and, you know, congratulations to EA. Whether you love EA or hate EA, whether you love the FIFA game or hate the FIFA game, if you like sports video games, this is a great thing. You know, to see a sports video game be the top-selling game in the world is nothing but good for the genre. Nothing but good for EA, right? And if it's fashionable to hate EA, I think particularly in the last 3 or 4 years, EA has become a much more positive influence in the video game world. Like, not only am I a big fan in varying degrees of their sports video games, but I love Star Wars Battlefront. I've had a blast with that. My son and I still play that on a regular basis. I thought Titanfall 2 was tremendous, and I don't even like first-person shooters, and I played through the entire campaign of Titanfall 2 and was incredibly impressed by that. So, to me,
Don't forget the fact that an EA Access exists.
An EA Access on the Xbox One, as we have talked about, is absolutely the best value in gaming. So I'm just glad, and I hope that they continue to invest in the games in the way that it appears that they're doing, as we'll get to. They've made some pretty interesting choices for the lineups coming forward. And again, sort of tying it back to the original conversation, this is why I think that they can afford to, and I put that in air quotes, afford to continue to take their time and invest in NBA and see if they can come up with a formula that ultimately they think is going to work out long term for them.
So tying in with the success of FIFA was the journey, which was the introduction of its story mode, right? And, so 10 million people, 10 million plus, tried it at the very least.
Yep.
So that tells you that there's a high level of interest in it. Just the fact that you put any new feature in a game and a percentage of consumers are never going to touch it or know it exists or whatever, 10 million people at least gave the journey a chance, and EA announced that the journey, you know, to no surprise, will be back in FIFA 18 with new characters and new storylines.
And again, I think it's really smart, and not from a cynical perspective, right? But how can you get somebody who might want to play, you know, people walk through a game store, they walk through a Walmart, and they see FIFA playing, they're like, wow, that looks great. But unless they're a big-time soccer fan, they would be intimidated by it. So having a single-player story mode that lets you experience the game in a way where you don't need to know any of the nuances of what a transfer window is or try to figure out Ultimate Team when you don't even know who any of these people are and what these crazy terms mean. You can just play as a guy who learns. Literally, the game teaches you how to play, and then you start to learn to play on a team. It's brilliant. And then at the end, you get your guy a card that you can lead you directly into Ultimate Team. It's brilliant in every way. I personally didn't translate to me as a breakthrough experience, but that's fine, because the way that I like to play soccer games is to take my Everton club and remake it and go try to make a run. So I thought it was kind of cool, but it didn't grab me personally. And I don't know how many of those 10 million people it grabbed, but it must have grabbed enough, because they're going to do version 2. And again, as somebody, you know, with Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager, you know, these are games that are pretty deep and can be intimidating. A lot of people tell me all the time they want to play these games, and they sometimes have a hard time figuring out how to start. It's so great to be able to offer a new way for not only new fans to play the game in a way that can really introduce them and ease them into it, but also returning fans having a new experience, I think, is great. You know, there are lessons to be learned for all kinds of games, not just console sports games, but even the games that we make. So, you know, I'm glad it was a success. I'm glad they're building on it, and I'm curious to see what part two of the journey is.
So we might differ on our opinion on this, Rich, but curious just to get your quick thoughts on what you think will be with FIFA on Nintendo Switch later this year, and whether you think anyone's going to have any interest in it, depending on what that game turns out as being, or whatever I'm trying to say here, Rich, whatever the game turns out to be, will it be at all appealing to either soccer fans or Nintendo fans?
Well, I can't wait. I'm going to get it. I'm excited for it. But again, that probably means that it's doomed, right?
this has been the case in the past, yes.
Since, you know, I love the Vita, and that didn't exactly work out great. And I love the Wii U, play that all the time. That didn't exactly turn out great. So I obviously, when the game was announced, I mean, you and I think both predicted that FIFA would be the only game that would be announced for it from an EA Sports perspective, and we
correct,
know that.
Yeah.
There was obviously a lot of typical internet uproar when it was either leaked or revealed or somehow came to knowledge that the version that will be published on the Switch is going to be sort of the foundation is the 360 code base as opposed to the current gen code base. I think that's all fine because personally, I was on a plane this past week going back and forth to Las Vegas, and I played an hour of FIFA, I think 12 or 13 on the Vita, and had a great time with it. I am so ready for a on-the-go FIFA experience that is going to be what I bring around with me on that Switch when I go places. And I mean, you're telling me 3 or 4 years ago, if I could have had a enhanced version of the 360 FIFA anywhere with me anytime, I would have signed up for that in a second. I'll sign up for that right now. And I don't mind that it's not going to be the same as the PlayStation 4/Xbox One version because, hey, I'm going to get 10 hours of the Xbox One version as part of my EA Access subscription. I'm going to have FIFA 16 or 17. I always get the numbers confused. I'm going to have it in the vault, right? I've got plenty of ways to experience that game without spending any money on it other than the cost of my subscription. And if I love it enough, I'll go get it through Amazon or something for $45. But I can't take that with me. And now I got what I'm fully expecting to be a very playable version of FIFA on the Switch that I'm going to bring around with me. And I'm totally cool with that. I realize I'm very likely in the minority on that. But I'm excited. But I'm excited for the Switch overall, and FIFA 17 being on, or FIFA 18, or just FIFA, I think that's what they're calling, being on it. I'm totally down with that, as long as it works. You know, like, the problem with the Wii U launch sports games was that they didn't work that well. There were frame rate problems. They were clunky. As long as it works well, I'm excited about it, and we'll be buying FIFA on the Switch the day it comes out.
Okay, so, you know, I had some time to think about this ever since the initial reveal, and I think the disconnect between your opinion on this and pretty much everyone else, Rich, is that you see the Nintendo Switch as a portable system that can also be played at home. Everyone else, based on what Nintendo themselves say, is that it's a home console that can be taken on the road. So it's just a different perception of what the system is going to be. So when Nintendo sells the system as this is basically a next gen system, it's meant to be a home console with portability. People expect a home console experience. You, though, are looking at it as essentially a Vita that can hook up to your TV and play your Nintendo games. And it's just a different approach. You have a different way of valuing the system, a different way of valuing what would be a last-gen FIFA port, just because you're prioritizing the mobility aspect of it. And does that make sense?
100%. And it's okay. The exact opposite reason. I could not stand the Wii versions of any of the EA Sports games. Hated them. I hated the waggle controls. I hated how they tried to. I mean, I give them credit for trying to create something different. I just personally couldn't stand the experience on the Wii. And on the Wii U, as I mentioned, all those launch sports games, they didn't work very well. They weren't that fun. But those were also completely tethered to my house, and I had superior versions of those on my home consoles already. And you know, Brian, I am a huge Nintendo fan. My son, who
I've heard,
nine,
yes.
loves Super Mario Maker and loves Zelda games. You know, A Link Between Worlds, he's playing now, just absolutely loves it. Loves so much about Nintendo. It's been such a wonderful way for him to grow up experiencing video games, having that really good, positive foundation of so many terrific Nintendo games. So mm-hmm. I'm biased very much towards Nintendo because I'm a huge fan. And yes, I travel a lot, and I'm always carrying my briefcase
That's
with
true.
Me, where I got my laptop with me, and I'm going to have my Switch with me. And it's going to be really nice, Brian, when I'm kicking back in the hotel at night, you know, and I got SportsCenter on, and I take out my Switch, and I play a little bit of FIFA, you know.
And then the battery dies.
Well, I'll have it plugged
Sorry,
in.
Bitch. Oh, you're on the plane. It's you're out of luck.
I there's said no, I was at the hotel. No I'm at the hotel. So, but yeah, no, you're completely right, Brian. I'm looking at it as a different experience that I can bring with me while my quote-unquote main sports game experience will be on my PlayStation 4 and my Xbox One. Here's my opportunity to play something fun, sort of a secondary version of it. And I'm totally excited about that. And yes, I'm definitely in the minority. And there are plenty of red flags about this, you know, the Switch system, but I'm positive on it.
I think the other red flag as far as support from EA is that they came out and said they'll support the system basically when it gets popular.
Well, I don't blame
or
them.
Or when it proves itself. And no, absolutely not, Rich. You can't blame that, but it doesn't give a consumer very much faith about where things are going, that it won't be the same situation as Wii U, where they put out one game and that was it.
But nobody bought the Wii U, so it would have been dumb to do a second or a third game. If the Switch is successful, EA and 2K and Ubisoft and Activision will all make games for it, and if it's not successful, they won't. It's you know, I'm of the strong opinion that I don't need any experiences on the Switch other than Nintendo experiences. We've seen for three generations now third parties making lousy games for the most part for these consoles, with a few notable exceptions. You know, Nintendo's just different. They're weird. They're strange. I love them for what they do. I hope they continue to do what they do. I don't need Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or Overwatch on the Switch. I want Mario games and Yoshi games and Mario Kart, and I want all the great in Splatoon and Zelda. Like, those are, I'm perfectly fine with that. And again, I realize I'm not speaking for the majority, or at least wasn't what doesn't feel like it. Nintendo consoles are great for Nintendo games, and PlayStations and Xbox Ones are the same thing, and they've got all those games. For in my world, and I think in you know, a few million people's world, there's room for two difference. You don't have to have all the third party support to be successful on the Switch.
All right, so we'll hit on the Switch again in an upcoming podcast once that system comes out, and then again once we learn more and get to play FIFA and NBA 2K later in the year.
Yep.
But two more things I wanted to make sure we got to in this episode, and that was One, a confirmation of a certain thing, and the other, the omission of a certain thing. First, we got confirmation, which everyone kind of assumed it was going to happen, but that Madden will be moving to the Frostbite engine next with Madden NFL 18. So I'm curious, Rich, what you think this means for the series, because if we look back on FIFA 17 is where Frostbite was first implemented for EA Sports games, or if you're not counting golf, as far as the yearly league license type games, is FIFA 17. And it was a little underwhelming, I think most people would say. It was basically just an enhancement of visuals, and I can go down the list of kind of what EA even advertises on their website as far as this. It's new environments like tunnels and locker rooms and manager's office, and you got the managers in there. You got so and the stadiums more authentic, more facial emotion. It was mostly visual related, and visuals in a football game, while important, facial animations and things like that are hidden by helmets. Bodies are hidden by pads and jerseys, and it's not as that level of detail isn't as critical in a football game. Do you expect more out of Frostbite with Madden as far as going beyond visuals, or do you think it'll kind of be comparable to what FIFA got?
I have absolutely no idea. I couldn't.
That's what I like to hear on this
well,
podcast.
No, I mean, what I'm saying is, look, I played plenty of FIFA 17 and plenty of FIFA 16. I would be lying if I told you that I could point out any real difference. Okay. Sure. I've also said many times that I'm not one of those guys who gives a darn about whether something is 1080p or 720p. Like, I don't care. I mean, at a certain point in time, once we went from standard def to high def, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm not that big of a I'm not one of those guys. I'm not dismissing its importance because I realize that it is important, but I'm also not the kind of guy who went out and bought a 4K TV either. So my point is, I don't what it will be. I'll be curious to see are the things that when you play as much Madden as we do, Brian, if there will be improvements in that. For example, will the degradation of the few remaining natural grass fields look better over the course of a game when it's raining or snowing, right? Because they look okay now, but they also don't look real. It's just, you know, when the snow is coming down and the players are trudging through the snow, it's like, oh, you can see the footprints, but it's not real looking. It's cool, but it's not real. Will that be something? Will the crowd look more like real people?
I have the big one for you, Rich, as you kind of hit on crowd. The big one is if we don't get real characters, the real football players, and other activity on the sidelines, Rich, Frostbite will be a massive disappointment.
So, yeah,
people have been asking for that for a decade. Give us better-looking sidelines. That better be one of the things that this delivers, I think.
Right. Well, that's a great point, and I want to talk about that in a second. But, you know, with the crowd, right, like – the crowds in the NFL don't jump up and wave their arms in unison at the starts of games. Like, that's just not...
This is news to me, Rich. This is what I do at Seahawks games. I wave my arms around wildly the whole game. I look like one of those blow-up things outside of oil change, you know, places.
Right. And so will there be subtle or even, you know, dramatic improvements to the crowds to make them look more lifelike? And again, I'm not a Madden hater. I'm not saying these things are terrible. I'm just like, when you play as much Madden as we do, 2-3 games a week in our franchise, these are the things that you just see. The sidelines, there still are not. When you look at players on the sidelines, their numbers are on the jerseys, but not their last names. Their last names are not on the back of the jerseys. Will that be better? Will, like, to your point, will they act a little bit more realistic? Like, typically the coaches' animations look pretty good, but the players behind them, you can just tell they're not completely,
they're a remnant
right, exactly,
you know, the old classic days.
Will the ancillary people on the sidelines, you know, the camera guys and the chain guys, like, will people operate independently of, or will there just be a series of groups of twos or threes that are sort of all doing the same thing? There's a lot of little weird stuff that happens all the time at the end of a play when a player is getting up and, you know, his feet are melting into the body of another player, or he gets caught up in a weird physic animation. Like, are these the things that Frostbite is going to to eliminate or dramatically improve? Because I think we all agree that pretty much, and there's always room for improvement, the fundamental gameplay of Madden is pretty darn good. So, but the more you play it, again, the more that you see these kind of things. And you see that in everything, whether it's the games that I think are the best this year, like MLB The Show and Pro Evo, you see stuff like that in there too. So what I'll be interested to see is it will just be a better looking version of the same sort of things that we've seen, or will some of these things that we have been seeing for the last few years finally sort of move from, you know, from meh or okay to whoa, that's awesome. That's what I'll be looking for. And I have no idea whether Frostbite will take care of some, all, or none of that.
Yeah, I just think it's important to lay out right away, though, that a lot of people hear new engine and they think it's basically a brand new game built from the ground up, right? Well,
FIFA proved that is not the case.
Yeah, and it's never been the case. The last time it was the Ignite engine. You know, it's like the buzzwords, engines, they don't, you know, it's not revolutionizing the game necessarily. So I think just temper your expectations on that. Maybe they'll surprise beyond a little bit of what FIFA did. I mean, I think it's just it's a good way to complement other improvements that are being made in the game.
Well, and the other thing is, right, like this is a platform. You know, the Frostbite engine is a platform that, if properly managed, and I'm talking way out of my hat here, but I know enough about software development that if you have a strong core platform, it can gradually improve the experience for all the different offshoots. We know that Frostbite was used for Battlefield. It's used for the golf game. It's used now for FIFA. It'll get used for Madden. Ultimately, you'll go to NHL. So what you do by having more and more games utilize sort of a common core is that you have a larger group of people who are all of a sudden able to contribute positively to a larger group of games. And the longer that you have, you know, NHL operating, you know, building some of its core systems on something that less and less people know about, you know, basically it provides scalability, and providing scalability should provide better quality. I don't know that you'll see it incrementally on a year-to-year basis so much as over the course of, like, if you look over 2 or 3 years, you'll look back and you'll be like, oh man, if you plop in FIFA 16 next to FIFA 19, you'll be like, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe I used to play that thing. Look at that. You know what I mean? I think that's really what this is much more about that than incrementally having an annually released sports game have some sort of giant leap.
All right. So last major subject for this episode, Rich, is July 2015. We got kind of the reboot of EA Sports Golf Series with Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. They had dumped Tiger Woods after well over a decade of him fronting their golf series. They were coming off the last generation, where some great games in the last generation, particularly the last Tiger Woods game. And McIlroy was a little light on content. Didn't really blow anyone away.
It was a little more. I think you're being generous when you say a little light on content. It was.
You're probably right.
It was at release. It was seriously lacking. They definitely fixed that problem over the course of a year. But when it first came out, it was very lacking in content.
Absolutely. So it was a tepid response from consumers. It didn't sell all that well. It also didn't have any digital revenue stream built in, which was a major, I don't know, flaw or just I'm sure it wasn't an oversight. They just couldn't get it done in time or come up with a way to organically weave that into the core of the game somehow. There was no mention of a new McIlroy game from EA for fiscal year 2018. That means no McIlroy game this spring, which is when it would have released if they had stuck to the original plan of every other year. If you remember, Rich, it was McIlroy will be 1 year, UFC the next year, golf fighting, essentially was the plan. It looks like no McIlroy game this year. The other factor into why that could potentially be is that there's now a pretty good competitor on the market in Golf Club, which also has Golf Club 2 releasing this year. So not only was EA facing a decision on the brand and how to better monetize it post-release, but they also have another game on the market that was kind of cutting into their market share. Any thoughts on this? I don't know if it's a decision to shelve McElroy or push it back or reevaluate things, but it's definitely not going to apparently release this year.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. So for years, Brian, we talked about how we found it strange that there would be a new golf game every year, right? Like, unlike team sports, unlike the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, baseball, and so on, you know, you don't have new rosters, you don't have new rules, you know, you don't have new teams or relocated franchise, you don't have new stadiums. Golf just didn't lend itself very well to an annual release. Now, for a while, they did it, and it worked out fine, but eventually it feels like it just kind of caught up to them to where there's just not, for whatever reason, it just doesn't make sense to release it every year. Now, there's other aspects of it too, right? Like for some years, you know, there was a big thing in PGA. Like one year, the big new thing was the Masters, and that was obviously hugely important. The Masters is by far and away the most important event in golf, and I mean, it's not even close. Like, there's really, you know, there's the Super Bowl, there's the NBA Finals, and then there's the Masters. I mean, you know, even if you're not a golf fan, you have to understand the amount of revenue and prestige around the Masters really dwarfs almost anything else. And so they lost that. They lost the rights to that after having that for a few years. And Tiger Woods, as a individual, was one of the world's most popular people. And, of course, he has, as all athletes do over time, faded. And, yes, there's interesting new characters, interesting new golfers in the world. You know, Rory McIlroy is not a tour de force. You know, Dustin Johnson is big. Jordan Spieth is big. But these guys don't have the personalities like a Tiger Woods had. But at the end of the day, it's just interesting that I'm pretty sure EA was planning on this being an every other year, but whether the game didn't generate the revenue that they wanted or whether or not just the investment of time and resources to build another one, you know, it's not easy to build a golf game on next-generation consoles. I mean, golf courses take a tremendous amount of time and effort to build and to get right. It's a complicated game with the physics and with how all of those things work. But I think really what may, and I don't use the word lightly, but what may have ultimately killed PGA Tour golf for EA, and you alluded to this earlier, there's not an ultimate team. There's just no ultimate team for this game. And it's very difficult to make the kind of money that you need to make if you don't have the additional revenue. And it's,
I was just going to say, go back to all the Tiger Woods games through the 90s, through the 2000s. They sold additional courses, and it was usually like $50 worth of courses or more every year. So it was an ultimate team. But in 2016 and 2017, people aren't going to buy downloadable content like that anymore. So they definitely had to come up with a different model of making extra money, and it looks like maybe that's the struggle that they've had. Right,
and so because they've had so much success with the team-based sports, I'm sure they just sort of looked at it. I'm sure they want to make the game. I mean, again, EA Sports, they have publicly said, you know, we want to make everything, right? We want to make baseball, and we want to make golf, and they want to make tennis, right? You know, tennis is another one. They haven't made a tennis game. No. In several years, because of
tennis,
same thing, right? Like
tennis and boxing,
right?
It's about licensing, and that's the same with golf. Although you don't need as many of them necessarily, but it's about the licensing costs that go into getting every individual.
Yep.
And then the inability to do an ultimate team type mode. Like they tried it in UFC, it didn't really work out. It wasn't really at its heart an ultimate team mode.
But it also just might be the demographics too, right? Like the people who
Oh, it's an older crowd.
Right. The people who Absolutely. Are buying PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones aren't, in some cases, aren't the people that are buying or playing PlayStation 2s and the Xbox 360s. You know, there's a lot of different parts, pieces to this puzzle. I think at the end of the day, if they had a way that they could have a version of Ultimate Team and PGA Tour Golf, it would be coming out this year. But I think it's that combination. There's no more Masters license. Tiger Woods is not the popular personality that he was. He's a shell of his former self. You know, you don't have the Ultimate Team. And it's a, generally speaking, an older crowd. And golf itself is on the decline. Like, the actual Sure. numbers of people playing golf has gone down a little bit over the course of time. There's just a lot... There's a lot of factors against it that I guess they haven't been able to solve. And again, I don't want to dismiss this. It takes every time that a console, there's a new console generation, the amount of time and effort that it takes to make a game that exploits it goes up. And I don't think it's ever gone up as much as it did in the move from the 360/PS3 to the Xbox One and PS4. At the end of the day, I just don't think EA has found the right recipe to where they can make the investment and recoup it at the anywhere close to the margins that they get from their, you know, the team-based games.
All right. Well, Rich, was that enough news for you for the beginning of a February?
I love it. It's great. How great is this that we're able to talk about all this good stuff and there's no major sports game coming out for at least another 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and we got more, I'm sure, to come on MLB The Show pretty soon.
I can't wait.
There's other games.
Wait.
There's a lot of indie games, arcade games that are in the works and coming soon. There's the Golf Club, Super Mega Baseball,
Out of the Park Baseball 18.
Out of the Park Baseball 18.
Come on, I gotta say it.
Old Time Hockey. There's a lot of fun stuff coming. That's not, you know, the show is the major one,
right?
But there's a lot of fun stuff that's going to be coming out, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot to cover on those also. So
these are great days to be a sports video game fan. I mean, I say it, but I say it for a reason. There are so many great sports video games to be played, and you can play them without spending a lot of money. So many different ways. And I'm not even talking about the latest versions of the latest games. You go back a year or two, there's a lot of great stuff out there. These are wonderful times to be a fan of these games that we love, Brian.
Yeah. Well, all right. Thanks, Rich, for coming on for this episode. We'll be back next week, where I'm sure there'll be a whole bunch of other stuff. to go through. Thank you out there. And, both of us want to thank all the listeners out there. We just crossed over 3 million downloads of the Press Row podcast.
Amazing.
Which is a pretty cool milestone. So thank you, everyone out there who's contributed to that number. We appreciate it. We're happy to put the show on for you and continue it on as we go forward. So,
well, the best part about it, Brian, is, of course, you know, 3 million downloads. Since we get $1 per download, you and I have made $3 million, right?
I was going to say it should be 5. If only it worked that way.
Yeah, if only. Heck, I would take a penny a download.
Jeez, that's cheap. That's just cheap. Don't sell yourself short.
But seriously, thank you to everybody. 3 million downloads. There are very few, very few shows of any type, whether you're talking podcasts, television shows, very few media productions of any type that can make the legitimate claim that they have been listened to or watched or viewed 3 million times. It's unbelievable. Thank you, everybody who has been listening to the Press Row podcast, whether you just started or whether you've been with us since the beginning. Thank you very much.
All right. So for Rich Grisham, I'm Brian Weedy. Again, thank you, everyone out there, and hopefully you'll continue to tune in starting with next week's episode. Take care.